The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. We will have Julie Donaldson with us today. She's got a great story to tell. She's with the Washington football team. The Washington football team, formerly known as the Washington Redskins, now the Washington football team, comes to Phoenix this Sunday. Julie is one of their executive vice presidents. She was just named this about a month and a half ago. She's been in local TV in D.C. She is the first female in-game broadcaster in the history of the National Football League. She's part of their broadcast. I was listening to her last week and on Sunday, and I want her to give us some insight into Ron Rivera's team, turn the script. Yes, the Cardinals are 1-0. Yes, it's a great win. Now can you stack it with Washington coming here? What are they all about? And with Dwayne Haskins at quarterback and Chase Young on the defensive line and so much more. She will be zooming in with us. That'll be at 10:20. Michael Fabiano from the Sports Illustrated side of things, the SI podcast, and Sirius XM. Fabs, all things fantasy football. Did your team stink out loud over the weekend? Who did Michael fail to mention? Who did Michael star in mentioning? All that with Michael Fabiano. That comes up here at about 10:45. Opening comments brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union. Later today, I will be at Desert Financial Credit Union. I will be walking in and taking care of business today. I like going in and having people that are there to help on many fronts. It's not just depositing a check. It may be other things that I have going on my personal side of things. They take care of your personal. They take care of your business. I was speaking with Jeff Mishi yesterday, their CEO. We were texting back and forth on some sports stuff going on. And it's good to be with someone who's involved in the community in many, many facets. That's Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate their support. Eric is with us. Eric Sorensen, Senior Executive Vice President of Nothing or Everything. What's new, man? What are you seeing? Did you see what John Wilner wrote today?
I did not. Are we going to have Pac-12 football in like 2 weeks? No? Yes?
John Wilner, headline, promising results from initial use of COVID-19 antigens test central to Pac-12 football's return. One school in the conference has been using Quidel tests for a month. 4 months, actually. 4 months. So let's go back on this. Larry Scott, last week, we have a deal. We are going to be the ones leading forward. And then it comes out that SMU had been using Quidel. Well, now it comes out that Quidel actually has been used by the U of A, 25,000 tests on students, athletes, members, ICU patients since spring. So, I don't know. Like, hey, Larry, how about rather than trying to win the room with the delay, that you just say this has been something that the University of Arizona has been using since spring. Within our conference, we feel really good about this moving forward. So Quidel is the cure, not the cure. It's the way to get this football season back on track. It has nothing to do with USC against Stanford or Arizona State against Washington. It has everything to do with Quidel. Now, because this news is out here today, and because the Big Ten is meeting today. This, according to Adam Rittenberg and others, they're talking about, they being the Big Ten, a October 17th start to their season. It was January 1st. Then it was Thanksgiving. And now, maybe by this afternoon, October 17th. And I guess the question for you is, on all this, is we're both fans of college football. Could the Big Ten put everything together in time to still be in place to have a Rose Bowl on January 1st?
No. I don't know. How many games are they going to play?
Don't know.
They're going to be 4 weeks behind the other three Power 5 conferences that have already started or that will be starting.
They hope will start. So, like, the SEC is not supposed to start this weekend. The SEC is supposed to start next week, right?
Right.
And I keep saying supposed to because we've already had postponements. We've already had delays. We've already seen where this has been a hodgepodge September on the college football front. If the Big Ten is able to get started on October 17th, if they announce that this afternoon, Eric, or Adam Rittenberg is saying at the latest by tomorrow morning, then if you're the Pac-12 and you already have Quidel out there, as the Big Ten does too, reportedly. There's a lot of reportedlys in this story. When can the Pac-12 start? When should the Pac-12 start? Do they need 2 weeks? Do they need 3 weeks? Do they need a month? I mean, what sounds reasonable in all of this to you? And if it's a shortened season, if it's 8 games, okay, let's say it's October 17th, and you go October 17th, November 17th, December 17th, you play 8 straight weeks. And then you go to the Rose Bowl. Is that enough? 9 weeks, maybe. Maybe through Christmas. Would you be approving of that?
Well, you have this thing that's called the Pac-12 Championship game. So you'd probably have to play that to decide who goes to the Rose Bowl, depending on who the two teams are. I think October 17th is a perfect time to start. What's today? The 15th of September? Give these teams a month to get ready to play. That seems feasible. I'm sure there are a lot of teams that would be more than happy to play right now. But I find it interesting, Brad. So let's say the Big Ten starts and finishes.
Right.
And let's say the other three Power Five conferences start and finish. And let's say the Pac-12 is like, nah, we're good. We're just going to hang out until the spring. Like, can you imagine?
Well, especially when these tests, okay, so reading more what John Wilner wrote today in the San Jose Mercury News, and for those of you that don't read the Wilner hotline, it is well worth the read.
Especially for Pac-12 stuff, he's like got his finger on the pulse all the time.
Right. Okay, so this test by Quidel, they get the results within 15 minutes. I'm reading here. It's the gold standard of viral testing. It's been used for decades to detect not only influenza, but Ebola. But that type of testing takes up to 48 hours. This test with Quidel takes 15 minutes, okay? 15 minutes. So if this is already in place at the U of A, and Larry Scott is trumpeting this last week, what in God's green earth are we still doing here a week later with nothing coming out of the Pac-12? Is it the presidents? The presidents are saying, this is our conference. And you know, I've had this stance that the Pac-12 may come out looking like the smartest ones in the room on all this if this herky-jerky start to the season continues. I truly believe that. As much as I don't like it, I get local governments. People don't want to hear that stuff. They just want their football. Well, if you have this 15-minute test, how can you keep pushing back? If the Big Ten announces something this afternoon, the Pac-12's got to follow suit. They have to.
Because the coaches are going to be looking to Larry Scott in the Pac-12. The Pac-12 coaches are going to be like, okay, so what? We know what they're doing. We know what the teams that are already playing are doing. What are we doing over here? Like, what's our plan?
Now, if it's local government, if that gets in the way, and look, right now, would Pac-12 games be canceled in the state of Oregon, maybe the state of Washington, definitely in Northern California, and in L.A. because of the fires? The fires would be wiping out a lot of games right now, in my opinion. I know the Cardinals played the other day, but that was over in the Bay, and the winds shifted just right.
Yeah.
So while this is something separate, I know that Oregon, their starting quarterback yesterday, I have it on very good authority, my wife, that he is still here in town. He has not been called back to Eugene because she was there working out where he was working out. So players are still hanging around here. You hear that they're going to get called back, but it hasn't happened as of yet. And, you know, a couple of weeks into this season, if I'm Ohio State and I'm sitting there watching the football that's out on the field, and I got to go through a few more weeks and we start to, you know, they watched Clemson the other night. They may be watching Clemson saying, we could get these guys. You know, they've got to be believing we could get Clemson after watching Clemson the other night. And when the SEC opens up, Ohio State's got to be saying, we can get any of these guys.
But it's the first week. I mean, I don't judge anything off of how teams look in the first week. There is no preseason. The schedule has been so messed up. You know, get back to me in week six, and I'll have a much better idea of who the true heavyweights are and who the teams that have just kind of struggled out of the gate. And, you know, like, Clemson played Wake. I mean, is Clemson really going to bring their A game to play Wake?
Well,
Wake Forest?
Hey, you got to take care of it. So are you saying Are you saying the Fun Belt? We shouldn't be excited about what the Fun Belt did to the Big 12?
No, I'm not saying that. I told you on Monday. I mean, it's just they play good football in the group of five. I mean, it's not like they're playing, you know, Division II schools. And it's just the first week of the season. You see it all the time. I'll take you all the way back to Appalachian State and Michigan. It happened in the first weekend of the season. 15 years ago, okay?
Like, okay, well,
weird
what about...
shit happens. I can't explain it. That's just the way it is.
Okay,
Every year, it's the same thing, Brad.
Okay, so if the Fun Belt continues this season...
You're right.
Do you hold it over Oklahoma that they're in the Big 12 when it comes time for the playoff?
Maybe, and you also look at the fact that although Oklahoma has been in the playoff the last 2 to 3 years, they haven't been competitive in any of their playoff games. And I think eventually, even though every season is different, I think that will hurt Oklahoma. I mean, what LSU did last year to Oklahoma was one of the worst beatings I've seen one blue blood put on another blue blood in probably my lifetime. I mean, it was like a script. I mean, it was like 11-on-7 most of the time for that LSU offense. So.
Okay, but my point is on the Fun Belt, would you consider a Fun Belt team to be, and they're the Sun Belt, but I call them the Fun Belt because they're fun and it's trendy out there. Would you consider a Fun Belt team, should they be under consideration this year to be in the CFP if this continues?
Sure.
I know it's 1 week or two weeks.
Of course. And if I go to Louisiana, I want Iowa State to run the table.
Yeah.
Because the better Iowa State does, the better that win is going to look. And that was a beatdown. Like, that Iowa State jumped out to the early lead, and after the second quarter, that was not a close game at all.
You could say the same thing. You would want Kansas State and Kansas and Iowa State to all keep winning, to start winning. If you're Oklahoma, you have to look at what happened to the Big 12 and say, this is not going to help us out because we're only going to play Big 12 teams.
Right.
And nationally, it's going to be like, well, that conference stinks this year. So why are we supposed to get excited about this?
And I do think the Big 12 took it on the chin last weekend.
Yes.
I mean,
no question.
It was not a good look. And, you know, the two, I don't know, heavyweights in the conference, Texas and Oklahoma, won big, but they should have won big.
Well, I just think today is going to be really interesting on this deal with the Big 10 because – the domino has to fall, and if it's out there now that, look, U of A has had this antigen test, 15-minute rapid response test, and they've been using it, so let's get off our asses and get something done. You know, this really isn't that hard. All right, on the other side, we're going to switch gears. Julie Donaldson will join us from Washington. We will talk about the Washington football team coming to Glendale to meet your Cardinals this Sunday. That's next. So now let's flip the script. After winning up in San Francisco, the Washington football team comes in here this Sunday. Julie Donaldson joins us, part of the broadcast team, actually the first regular on-air female broadcaster in the history of the NFL. It's pretty cool. She had her first regular season game as Washington took down the Eagles on Sunday. Thanks for joining us out here. First and foremost, what was Sunday like for you in the booth and breaking that barrier?
You know, it's kind of pretty cool. And every time I still hear that, I have to take a pause and be like, wow, I'm a first, because there are so many women in this business that are first that, you know, I look up to as idols. You know, I was talking with just Doris Burke the other day, and she's going to be the first female to call the playoffs in the NBA. And I'm like thinking, you know, not to by any stretch of the imagination say that we're there, but the fact that there are so many firsts by what women are doing in sports, I think it's great. And you know what, if it's myself, then cool, but it was fun. You know, I felt like I just did the job that I would have done on anything. It just happens to be that I'm a female doing it, but Fortunately, we had a win to celebrate as well.
That's right. Makes life a lot easier. Try to fill time during a blowout in the first one. No way, no how. You also are in a position of management with the Washington football team. That journey for you, how did that come to be, and how do you like it so far?
Yeah, I'm Senior Vice President of Media and Content, and I'm the highest ranked female in this organization. You know, look, I've been in this business for 20 years, and I've worked in Miami, New York City, Boston proper, and DC for the last 10. So for one thing, I know the fan base. I really know kind of this market pretty well. But in those times and in those markets, I paid very close attention to my leaders, to my managers, to what they did well, what I liked, what I responded to, and to also to the certain things I say, you know what? I said, maybe if they approach us a little bit differently, the results might've been a little bit different. So I took good notes along the way. And part of what was going to be my career path, or at least in the back of my head, is when my days of being on camera was over, I said, maybe I'll go to business school and one day run a shop. So this kind of compiles everything together by putting myself in that position to really make change and have an impact. And of course, this organization, it's very well known that there's a lot of things that were broken and right. still are broken, and we have the opportunity to fix them. So it kind of seemed like a natural step, a natural progression. I've really enjoyed it. I'm being challenged in a lot of different ways, but I'm seeing that we're at a point where we are making change. We are making this a better franchise. We are making it better for the employees here. And that's really exciting to be a part of.
Have you had that moment, Julie, where it's you're in your car, or you're by yourself, and it's like, damn, I'm doing this?
When do I get a moment to do that though? That might be the better question.
Well put. No.
You know, look, it's very consuming on many levels, because when I came into this job, I knew the scope of it, but I don't think I entirely understood all that it would take, all the different levels that are required to it. There are a few times where, you know, people have to tell me, and in all honesty, if I'm just to be real with it, I don't think it's hit me that way. I really don't, because I just still view it as myself doing a job that I was hired to do. There's just a little bit more responsibility on my plate, but I'm certain there will be a time that'll come around and I'll say, wait a second, yeah. Like, that was pretty freaking cool.
Yeah, it might be over Oklahoma this week when you fly out for the game against the Cardinals. I don't know. You alluded to it a little bit. Of the things behind the onion being peeled back within the organization you've come into. When you have those moments, and now in your position of management, I'm just curious, are you like rolling your eyes like, really? We have to deal with this fire now? How have you handled the adversity?
Well, there's definitely been a lot of fire drills. It started really probably before I even took the job, right? And I didn't have much time to really think about the decision either, but I made sure that at least I made everything possible, asked every question possible to know that I was making the right decision. But things went really, really fast. And within the first week, you know, of me starting, that first article from the Washington Post had come out. And of course, another one came out that was even worse than the one before it. So coming in here, you know, there's a lot of people that are impacted by this negatively, men and women, that are really shook by everything that's going on externally and having to defend why they work here, having to defend what they do, what they love, and what they believe in. So, you know, on that level, it's kind of hard to have those conversations of saying, no, this is, we understand where you're at, and we understand what you're up against. And, you know, when emotions are high on many different levels, it's a little bit hard to navigate. But we decided, you know, and this is always the approach that I've taken, is you just meet things head on. You know, you don't let things fester. You don't let them, you know, linger out there. You don't internalize them. You address them. You talk about them. And then we can talk about where we can get going forward. So communication was one of the biggest things that I wanted to really work on in this organization when I first got here, is people worked independently. And I said, no, we need to work as one team. Once Jason Wright was hired, that was really kind of easy, as he was quick to say, all right, we're going to put this in motion, team meeting happening. We're going to see what do you need addressed. So yeah, it's been a lot of fire drills, but hopefully once we really get the right structure in place, we can get ahead of a lot of things and you know, not have to constantly be reacting to everything that comes our way.
You mentioned Jason Wright. What a terrific, terrific person. And when he was here with the Cardinals, couldn't have been a greater guy. And you just look at him and say, that all makes sense. You and I have both been in this business a long time. We see players that I refer to as lost souls when they're done playing. They don't know what they're going to do. That guy, you could see, like, he's going to be just fine. How has it worked out for him from your view?
You know, he came right in, and my first conversation with him is because we had set up a women's organization we call WIN, Women's Initiative Now. And there was a list of things that we had to address. And I'm not about talking about action. So whenever we talk to people and address them ever, I want to be able to have a plan that they know that something is going to take place. So my first conversation with him was, hi, here's a list of things I need to do and a list of things we need to address. We can get to formalities later. We can kind of get to the pleasantries, but especially in the first few weeks on this job, his day and my day, we were booked by 15-minute increments. And I mean that, no joke. It was hard to find 10 minutes free in the day. So we went straight through it. He had addressed everything that I had with the women. So he's been very great. He understands the demands. He understands the needs. And he understands people need to hear from him and see things take action. He's been really great to work with. I mean, what you see from him is what you get. And I hope it's the same thing with myself when we're out there. You know, we're not presenting fronts. We're presenting who we are. We talk just like, you know, like we do. And we address the company that same way. So he's been great. He's going to get this organization going in the right direction. There's a long list of things that have to take place, but he's not going to rush to it. I mean, he knows what it's like to have to be down in the weeds and what needs to be fixed. And now that he's in the position to oversee it, he's going to get the right people in place to do that. So we're very fortunate to have him.
Julie Donaldson with us for a couple of minutes. Washington football team here Sunday, taking on the Cardinals, two teams at 1-0. On the field, let's talk about first the coach, the move with Ron Rivera. What has he brought to the organization?
Stability, you know, and accountability. And those are things that this team, I feel like over the years, it's kind of just been like a little bit of a roller coaster. And, you know, everything that was going on, he's brought in to try and turn around a team that only won 3 wins. And then COVID hit. So he doesn't even get to meet his staff and all the players before we're shut down this virtual world of having to do it through Zoom. And then, of course, you have, you know, the social injustice issues that he had to face, the team rebranding, going through a name change he had to face. And, of course, now having to go through squamous cell carcinoma and go through cancer treatment. You know, but throughout the entire process, he's like this. He's just steady. Mm-hmm. And that's the one thing that every coach that has worked with him before, every player that has worked with him and played underneath him before has said, and now the guys that are with him that weren't with him are understanding. Is his leadership style doesn't change. And he says he gets that from being grown up in the military, is that you present a front and people will buy into that. Now, certainly when he goes to home, you know, when he's in the safety, he probably can, you know, let loose a little bit and exhale because this treatment is really hard on him. It's taking a toll. But if there was a man to be able to lead this franchise right now amongst all the controversy that we're facing, he is the right guy.
In terms of players, I could go up and down the roster, but let's just start with your quarterback, Dwayne Haskins. And what will the fans in Arizona be seeing on Sunday?
A different quarterback than you saw last season. You know, in his rookie campaign, you know, I think things got lost a little bit in the shuffle of Case Keenum and Colt McCoy going out there. Then all of a sudden you just threw him into the fire and said, okay, now we're going to focus on you and it's your team. He knew coming into this season, it was his team. He knew exactly what head coach Ron Rivera wanted from him. It was very clear what he had to work on. He worked on his body. He worked on his leadership. He did the things he needed to do in order to be the leader of this franchise. And when it came down to voting for captains, they voted for him. And just against the game on the Eagles at the halftime, they were down 17-0. Mm-hmm. Head coach Ron Rivera has to go get an IV as he goes through this treatment. And he says, you know what I hear? I hear Dwayne Haskins addressing the locker room. He told the guys, look, we were in the same situation last year, but a team came back and beat us after we were up 17-0. Why can't we be that team? Because we're on our home turf. Well, the team heard him. He also said, you know, offense is going to hold their own. The offense is going to pick things back up. And the message that he delivered, it rallied the guys together. They saw his leadership and they were able to close it out. So you're going to see a more composed quarterback. He has more command of the offense. He's making better decisions. The ball is coming out quick, which it has to in this offense that Scott Turner's putting out there. You know, he still had a little bit of accuracy issues, but once he settled down in there, you know, you saw the shots that he kept missing with his receivers, either over long or just a little bit short, he was able to connect on. So it's going to take a little bit for this offense to be fully clicking, but I do believe that Dwayne is trending in the right direction.
From the broadcast booth, when you look down on the field, who catches your eye? I know that's a pretty open-ended question, Julie, but
not really.
But there may be a couple guys, you know, before I get you out of here that you say, okay, Brad, here's a couple that really, really stood out to me.
Well, there's the one and only that just jumps right out of the top of my head. It's Chase Young. I mean, look, we drafted him number 2 overall, and had Cincinnati not needed a quarterback, thank you that they did, this team was able to pick him up. Otherwise, for certain, he would have been gone at that number 1 spot. Every player that I ask, is he as good as advertised? Will he be as good as advertised? Their answer is he's better. So if he's better than what we were expecting from him, and he had a sack and a half in that game against Carson, and I guarantee you he would have been able to have more. But what he does is he opens it up for everybody else to be able to have the opportunity. They had 8 sacks on Carson Wentz. They haven't had that many in a while. I think their record is 10 total. They've had that 2 times, but it's been quite a few years since they've had that. In this defense, with him out there and drawing so much attention, and he is fast, so Kyler Murray better be ready because we know he can get out and run. Chase has that speed. Montez Sweat has that speed. Ryan Kerrigan can come in with his legs rested, and you get to see what he can do. He had 2 sacks against the Eagles. And the interior guys, they were able to get out there and have their own as well. So Chase Young, when you see him on the field, he is a prototype of what a football player should look like, and he plays like that as well. So I'll start with Chase, go to the D-line. That's what you really have to worry about on Sunday.
One last question. That is an Arizona angle, and that is Logan Thomas. I know it's not a player that everybody talks about, but out here, when Bruce Arians was here, he raved about Logan as a quarterback, mentioned briefly like he might need to change position, but it wasn't really something. He's come in and been a good fit for you.
He has, you know, and there's times where he's in the room and he's talking with Dwayne or he's talking with offensive coordinator Scott Turner, and he's saying things that a tight end shouldn't really know because he does have that quarterback experience. But does that help him playing tight end? He says not necessarily. It just means he can translate things a little bit differently. So he's still having to learn some of the nuances at tight end. He's still relatively new to that. But in that position, even when he was with Detroit last year, he wasn't necessarily looked at to be the number one guy. They're relying on him a lot in this offense to step up, and they need him to take advantage of that. He did in this game, especially in the red zone. That is where this team has struggled. They were ranked 27th in the league last year in converting in the red zone. Logan Thomas was that. And even when he's in there and when teams realize they have to pay attention to him, well, guess what it does? It opens up Terry McLaurin on the side. It opens up the middle for Steven Sims. It has you say, okay, which guy do we have to pay attention to? Because we also have the running backs that run and catch. So by Logan Thomas being that one that can show that he can catch, you know, here's the whole thing too, you know, do quarterbacks want to block? Not necessarily. So we'll see if that becomes something he develops up in his game, but he is a very big body and he's an easy target for Haskins. So we're hoping he's going to really grow in this offense.
Julie, it's been a pleasure. Great insight. Thanks for the time.
Of course. We'll see you on Sunday.
There's Julie Donaldson there with the Washington football team. And we're back with more after this timeout. So for many of you watching and taking this in, I've been getting bombarded with what are the TV ratings or what were the TV ratings like for Sunday. And I wanted to wait until we got through the weekend. For some reason, TV ratings in sports today have become a political event. There is a group of you out there that don't want to see the NFL do well. You want to protest. You don't want to watch. And that's fine. There's another group of you out there that wants to see the NFL and have the NFL do well, and that's fine. Either way, I'm good with it. So I got the TV numbers yesterday for here in Phoenix. I put it up on my social, and immediately there was a side saying, see, the numbers weren't as good as they were a year ago. I don't know that. I don't care. That's not how it works in the business of TV ratings, because who you played a year ago and at the time you played them and all that, all factors are not equal, okay? All I know is that in Arizona, the TV rating was a 17.4. What does that mean? It means that there were about 300,000 people per minute that were watching the NFL, the game between the Cardinals and 49ers. At the same time, Tampa Bay was playing New Orleans, and that game was getting a big number. Now, on the other side, for those of you that want to make this a political event, and Eric, I don't know where you were on this, but for those of you who want to make it a political event, the Cowboys-Rams game was down 17%. It had 17.4 million people that were taking it in per minute. That's a lot of people. But as people like to tell me, well, there's 250 million Americans. So it means that there's only about 15% of the country that was watching football. Whatever you want to do with football ratings and numbers, knock yourselves out. If you think that this is what is an indicator of what is going on with our country in the election, I would suggest that you need to go on a walk or a date or go see a movie or go do anything that says that football correlates to the mood of our country. So I don't know, do you follow rate? I know it's our business, But does it matter one way or the other? Like, if the cardinal numbers were like a 5, I would be sitting here saying, wow, that is a huge precipitous drop-off. They're a 17 for the season opener. So the pent-up demand, are they usually around a 20? Yeah. Well, then the numbers were down. It's still millions upon millions of people. The politicizing of numbers, I could sit here and say, yep, those of you on the right, look, the numbers were down. And that would be accurate. And I could sit here and say, yeah, the numbers were down, but there's still millions upon millions of people that were watching. And that would be accurate.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's the ratings are the ratings. I care more about the brand and the product. And I thought up until last night, I thought the NFL product was really, really good. The two games last night, not very good at all. Like, they resembled preseason football.
So. Okay, so to me, Herb Street and Fowler made watching the Steelers Giants more watchable than the guys that they had doing the late game. The Titans
and the guys that they had doing the late game are the guys we're going to be seeing on Monday night.
I know. And I was just kind of like, Herb Street and Fowler were fine. Maria Taylor was terrific. That's it. We don't need bells and whistles. We don't. I don't need Brian Greasy. Lewis Riddick was fine. Steve Levy, it's just not anything that gets me wound up. I'm not being critical of them. It's just, okay, some guys are announcing a game. It didn't feel special.
The great thing was, Brad, it sounded like Fowler and Herbstreit had been calling NFL games for 15 years. Yeah. And that just tells you how great those two are. They're just so good. It was just so natural. It's like, oh, it's Monday night and they're on my TV.
Yeah, like, it didn't matter.
The good ones are just seamless.
It didn't have to be Clemson against Texas. It didn't, you know. And were the Giants and Steelers great football to watch? It was okay. The late game was dreadful.
I thought both games last night were just. But I mean, the Giants just aren't a sexy team, really, outside of Danny Dimes and Saquon Barkley. They're just, you know, kind of. They don't have a lot of appeal. It's not like watching the Chiefs.
You know where I found myself last night was Padres Dodgers. So here's the thing with our baseball team here has been so bad this season. Like, give me a bigger disappointment in Major League Baseball outside of the Yankees with their payroll, and I'll give you the Arizona Diamondbacks. It's just we're here in Arizona and nobody knows, nobody cares. So the Dodgers and Padres open a 3-game series. Eric, the Padres are a game and a half, and today they're a half a game back of the Dodgers. And I'm watching, and there's an admiration of a home run by one of the Padre players. So Joe Davis or Earl Hershiser lose their minds on the Dodger broadcast. You can hear stuff coming out of the dugout. It's 2 weeks to go in the season. Kershaw gets run. The Dodgers are kicking the ball all over the place. They look sloppy. And the Padres are a half game back of the Dodgers today. And I was gripped. Like, Broncos, Titans, I got it. Enough football. But the Padres are really fun to watch. Like, they are really fun to watch. And I'm going to watch tonight. I know tonight we have a Game 7, Clippers-Denver. I'm going to watch. Tonight we have the Padres-Dodgers. I'm going to watch. Even the Mercury tonight. It's a single elimination game for the Mercury tonight. So I'm going to watch tonight. And I'm sorry the Diamondbacks are playing the Angels. I am sorry for that because it's just – and, of course – Football AZ's on tonight, so I'm going to watch.
So yesterday, I don't know why, but I just decided to peek at the MLB standings. And you realize that there is only one team in Major League Baseball who has less wins right now than the Diamondbacks, and that's the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Yeah.
I think it's the Diamondbacks and the Red Sox are the only teams that have less wins right now in Major League Baseball than the Pirates.
Well, and I've decided I am going to reach out to Mr. Kendrick. I'm just and see if he'll come on. And he may not. It just depends when you catch Ken. Because I don't need butterflies and ponies and ice cream right now. I just like, and it's not. Are you going to fire Torrey Lovello? I think it's a very fair question to ask. Like, somebody's got to, can you just chalk this up to, well, it was in a pandemic, it's just been an odd year, we're going to press reset and start all over again. You could do that if you kept the team together, but you blew the team up. And you traded away a guy in Starling Marte that you just brought in January.
Yep.
And I know he went through a personal deal, but so to me, it was much more of a, where are we going here exactly? Because the attitude of the Padres, I think that's what irked the Dodger announcers last night. Those guys are hooting and hollering and jumping over the fence after big plays on the dugout. And they're chirping back and forth at the Dodgers. And it's the sixth inning with 2 weeks to go in the season. And it's just like, oh, a team with attitude, a team with grit, a team that is having fun, you know?
They play and act kind of like a college baseball team.
Yeah.
Like they're like really excited.
That's a good way to put it. That's
great
a good way to put
camaraderie.
It.
And
yep. No, that's right. I agree with you on that. All right, Michael Fabiano on the other side with Sandy. Stay with us.
I'm Sandy Charles, and I'm now joined by Sports Illustrated's senior fantasy analyst, Michael Fabiano. Michael, we made it. Week one is in the books. Right off the bat, who surprised you the most in week one?
I would say, I don't know that I was surprised by Aaron Rodgers having a big game because he's Aaron Rodgers, but after what we saw last year, I wasn't expecting to come out and have such a massive performance, well over expectations. And hopefully he ends up doing this all season long because that would make him one of the best draft bargains in fantasy football. And then Cam Newton as well, 75 rushing yards on 15 carries. I mean, it was nice to see Josh McDaniels sort of alter his offense to suit Cam Newton. I don't know that 15 carries a week is sustainable for a quarterback. He's going to get beat up pretty bad, but the fact that they ran RPOs and that they had design runs in the offense for Cam, very promising signs for his fantasy future. Let's put it that way.
Who would you say you were most disappointed by?
There were several, but Michael Thomas, I mean, even before he got hurt, the targets weren't there. This is Michael Thomas. This is the guy who is the first wide receiver off the board and likely the only wide receiver to go off the board in their first round in a lot of drafts. And so now he's got the high ankle. Those things can linger. They can be an issue. Ask Saquon Barkley. So now you have to worry about Michael Thomas, your first round pick, being 100%. And New Orleans didn't do much through the air either. Drew Brees was basically held in check. He had a couple of touchdown passes. His yardage total left a lot to be desired. So maybe things will change on Monday night against the Las Vegas Raiders. But right now, if Michael Thomas is on your fantasy football team, you are a little bit concerned.
There's a lot with the waiver wires. Let's start with quarterback. What are the most popular names?
Mitchell Trubisky. I can't believe I just said that. I actually had him as a DFS bargain this week, and he had a very strong game. And he's got the Giants this week. The Giants defense stinks. If you watch the game against Pittsburgh, you know that. Gardner Minshew, the magic mustache, 3 touchdowns, very efficient. He played very well. Ryan Tannehill also played very well. I'm not sure how many leagues he's going to be available in, though, but certainly a guy that needs to be added off the waiver wire without question.
Now, running back.
This is a long list, so I hope you got your pen and your paper ready. Benny Snell coming off a 100-yard performance against the Giants. James Conner, we don't know if he's going to be ready for week two. James Conner, I mean, he just continues to have injury issues. Nyheim Hines is probably going to be a very popular pickup off the waiver wire. He was very involved in the Colts backfield even before Marlon Mack went out. And now that Mack's done, Nyheim Hines and Jonathan Taylor are going to combine in that backfield. He needs to be owned across the board. Malcolm Brown was he wasn't the starter for the Rams. That was Cam Akers, but he was the lead back, had 2 touchdowns. He needs to be added. Joshua Kelly, one of my favorite preseason deep sleepers at the rookie running back position. He was tremendous. Looks like he's the number 2 guy there for Los Angeles. So there is certainly Adrian Peterson also comes to mind as well, which I knew he was going to go someplace they weren't going to play him. I didn't realize he was going to have that many touches. It's going to be a committee with him and DeAndre Swift, and Peterson's not going to be utilized in the passing game very much, but he needs to be owned. I don't know who the Jets running back's going to be this week. I don't know if it's going to be Josh Adams or Frank Gore. I guess it's going to be Frank Gore. At this point, I'm punting the Jets overall in that backfield with Le'Veon Bell banged up. But if you're desperate, Frank Gore, probably worth a look. Miles Gaskin, too, in some deeper leagues. Peyton Barber, who was the goal line back for Washington last week, is also a guy that you should be looking at off the wire. As I mentioned, there's a lot of names.
There are a lot of names. That list is long. Let's get to wide receiver.
Anthony Miller's probably owned in most leagues, but if he's not in your league, pick him up. A very good start against Detroit. Laviska Shenault, somebody I like. Paris Campbell was highly targeted by Phillip Rivers in the opener, a guy who missed most of his rookie campaign due to injuries. Alan Lazard had a very nice performance. Again, maybe owned in a lot of leagues, but he could be available in yours. Russell Gage had 9 catches, over 100 yards. And I don't know if he's going to duplicate that again, but that was a big performance. And Gage certainly someone to take an eye, keep an eye out for. Robbie Anderson, probably owned in most leagues, but had that big 75-yard touchdown from Teddy Bridgewater in week 1. So you could check the wire, see if he's available. Marquez Valdez-Scantling is also certainly available. Aaron Rodgers had so much success, and MVS was a big part of that with 96 yards and a touchdown in week 1. So he is also a player worth looking at. Deeper leagues, maybe Scotty Miller for Tampa Bay, as long as Mike Evans is at less than 100%. But Evans played most of the snaps against New Orleans. And Danny Amendola, who had a very nice game last week. He was a deep sleeper type when we found out that Kenny Galladay wasn't going to play. Now, if Kenny G returns this week, well, Amendola's value certainly not as good. But right now, Amendola's worth a look in deeper leagues as well.
Now, lastly, let's talk a little bit about tight ends on the waiver wire.
I was shocked when I looked at the ownership percentage of Dallas Goedert. I'm in 20 leagues, okay? Dallas Goedert was drafted in every single league. But if you look at his ownership percentage on some websites, it's low. I think ESPN, it was about 25%. That's crazy. So he is certainly the guy to go after at the tight end position if you need help. Logan Thomas in Washington had a touchdown against the Eagles. Also somebody to go out and grab. I think better things are ahead for Chris Herndon. Don't love him this week, but as a guy that you can play maybe long-term, he's worth a look. And then OJ Howard. I hate to say it. I'm going to hate myself for saying it, but he's worth a look because he had the touchdown last week. And although he didn't play as many snaps as Rob Gronkowski, Gronkowski didn't get as many targets. Gronkowski to me was a bust coming into the season and no more than a tight end too. But OJ Howard had the look of a guy that maybe he's going to get involved in that offense a little bit more.
Now I am joined by SI senior fantasy analyst, Michael Fabiano. We were just talking waiver wire. Michael, you touched on it a little bit with Marlon Mack being out. So what do you make of Jonathan Taylor now being the featured back?
If I drafted Jonathan Taylor in the 2nd to 4th round, which is kind of like the range he was going in from when he was drafted to the end of draft season, well, I'm dancing in the street. Okay. I mean, I don't know if you remember that show Perfect Strangers. That's probably before your time, but the Dance of Joy, that's what fantasy owners do. And you hate to see Marlon Mack get hurt, mm-hmm. but Jonathan Taylor is going to be the starter. He's going to share the workload with Nyheim Hines, but he is going to get a lot of important carries. And he was also targeted a bunch in the passing game. Yeah. This guy is going to be catching 3, 4, 5 passes a game. In addition to what he's going to do on the ground, he is going to have a big season in Indianapolis.
And you also touched on the Jets backfield. It's kind of a mess. Le'Veon Bell out for at least a few weeks. So how do you sort through this?
Blech. I mean, I don't. I try to avoid it at all costs. So the matchup this week is not great either. So they're playing the 49ers, although I guess it's a revenge game for Frank Gore. I don't know. But if I had to play a Jets back, it'd probably be Frank Gore, but I wouldn't be thrilled about it.
Now, the Saints had the highest scoring fantasy defense for week 1. Is this a sign of times to come and what we're in, or is it too soon to tell?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be that's the situation every single week or in the majority of weeks even, but that defense looked extremely good. They are a good young team. They've got a lot of first round picks in Washington, right? Chase Young was tremendous. They had 8 sacks. Philadelphia's offensive line is just banged up bad. So it was sort of the perfect storm. But New Orleans had a very strong week in terms of defense. So did Baltimore. So, and defenses, I know a lot of people out there playing leagues with no defenses or no kickers, but especially at the defensive position, you play the right matchups every single week. I mean, that's going to help. Washington was a big time play coming into the week. Philadelphia was a big time play coming into the week against Washington, and mm-hmm. Philadelphia was bad and Washington was tremendous. I don't know if they're going to keep that up. They've got a tougher matchup upcoming against Arizona, but it was nice to see the team formerly known as the Redskins putting on a defensive show there for fantasy fans.
The last one, Russell Wilson. Is his stock on the rise after that air show in Atlanta on Sunday?
I mean, he's always been one of the top quarterbacks, so I don't know if it's on the rise, but it's going to be interesting to see what he can do this week, because this is going to be a fun matchup. Cam Newton against Russell Wilson, Patriots, Seahawks. That's going to be great. The Patriots defense is going to be a lot more formidable, even with all the guys that opted out, than what Russell Wilson faced last week in Atlanta. So let's see if he can do it again. But it was fun to watch. He looked absolutely tremendous. Russell, Cam, Aaron Rodgers, these guys all put up very strong numbers.
It was a fun to watch. And that chip on that shoulder of Aaron Rodgers, I love it. It just keeps him going. As always, Michael, thank you so much. Again, this is SI's senior fantasy analyst, Michael Fabiano.